offering our humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai welcoming you to this week's afternoon satsang. Last week we spoke at length about vegetarianism, the value of vegetarianism, and how dear it is a quality to Swami. We're going to continue on that topic. We've spoken about a couple of factors or a couple of reasons why it is good to be a vegetarian. There are many more, and we don't claim that we'll cover all of them even this week. But it is just to give insight to the people who are still maybe on the wall or maybe still wondering if Swami really wanted it that way. So to continue on this journey and to give company to me, I have Brother Arvind in the studio. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem and Sairam dear listeners. As Prem said last week, we covered the environmental reasons and socio-economic reasons why vegetarianism would be much preferred. I mean, as we stated last week also, this is not some sort of a justification for why Swami has said. This is more like we accept what Swami has said and we are just trying to find reasons so that if at all we come across a person for whom Swami's word is not sufficient, what could be the possible reasons that could be touted for vegetarianism?
And the other thing also could be, the other thing also could be that, you know, oftentimes people ask that why something which was right sometime in the past is considered so wrong today. And these are all reasons for that, actually, when you speak about the environmental reasons or the kind of reasons we're going to be talking about today. The same habit which was acceptable sometime back becomes even more unacceptable and gory in the present condition. So for that reason, it's good to know why today people are against non-vegetarianism and are so vehemently for turning into vegetarians.
And you know, when you make that statement, the word that comes up in my mind is greed. You know, Mahatma Gandhi had said that there is enough in the world to satisfy every man's need, but not enough to fulfill even one man's greed. Greed is one of the vices for which, you know, Swami says there is no cure. Greed and jealousy, they have no cure. In fact, the entire Mahabharata, Swami says, has come about because of the greed of Duryodhana. Duryodhana's greed brought about the entire Mahabharata story, that great battle in which millions perished. In fact, I was watching one episode from this Mahabharata just yesterday. And there was one poignant scene between Mother Kunti and her eldest son Karna, who actually doesn't know that this is my mother, right? That is a story we will not go into now. But in the course of the dialogue, you know, the dialogue shifts to whether the crown makes a person greedy. I mean, a power, a place of power, a place of position is what makes a person greedy.
Okay.
So, Karna, who was actually a very noble person, had nobility in his veins. He had great virtues in his heart. Even he too starts behaving in an adharmic manner. And Swami says this is because of the company he kept, that is Duryodhana's company. But Karna on his own is a very, very virtuous person. And yet he is behaving in an adharmic manner. And his mother is questioning him, why are you doing this? And she is supplying a probable answer, saying that you, when you were just called the son of a charioteer, you were fine. The minute that crown has come on your head, you are doing all this adharmic thing. Is it power that is corrupting you? And then she says, you know, she only corrects herself. She says, no, it cannot be. Because today even my other children, that is Yudhishthira, Bhima, Arjuna, they are also wearing crowns on their head. But they are not behaving in this adharmic fashion. So a crown on the head need not be the cause for adharma. Then what is the cause for adharma? And so beautifully, you know, she concludes, she says that greed and thirst for the crown is what results in adharma rather than the crown itself. You know, if the crown comes to you, you accept it. If it doesn't come, it's fine. But when you feel that I cannot live without the crown, I need the crown at any cost, or I cannot live without money, replace it with anything. Money, power. Replace the crown with money or power. It is not money that corrupts or power that corrupts. The need for money and the greed for money and the greed for power which corrupts. And I found that dialogue so significant for our today's discussion, because as you said, today we shall see how this greed of man, it is not money that has corrupted man, it is not power that has corrupted man. That need for more money, that greed for more money makes him go to any extent, which makes it very dastardly and very nasty to be non-vegetarianism, to be a non-vegetarian in the world today.
And the other reason why a discussion such as this has value is that, you know, just sometime back I was going through a discourse where Swami is saying that you catch a cat, okay, and you feed it milk and fruits and try it, as Swami would say, sattvic food. You know, keep giving it sattvic food. You keep it on your lap and you keep feeding it milk, curds and fruits. The moment it sees a rat, it'll pounce and run away. Because Swami is saying, because that is the nature of the cat. There is only a limit to which you can change that nature.
Correct.
At some point or the other, the nature of the cat will come out. The nature of an animal will come out. But Swami went on to say that man is one animal, if you can call him one.
Where, why not? You can call him definitely.
You know, when he is born into a family, let's say he is born into a non-vegetarian family, he has the ability to consciously make a decision that this does not seem to be the right thing to do and to change his course of action. And he says, Swami says that that is what actually distinguishes man from the rest of the animals.
That is a very, very heartening thing to hear, Prem, because often I think that, you know, I have been very, very lucky. Lucky to have born into a vegetarian family, and therefore I do not face the problem of de-addicting myself from non-vegetarian food, which otherwise would have seemed very natural for me, because from birth I've been eating meat and it feels like another item in the food. I mean, today if somebody comes and criticizes onions or potatoes, I will feel they've gone crazy. So too, if I was used to meat as I am used to potatoes and onions, then I would have felt maybe the people are crazy. So in that sense, I feel that I'm really lucky, and maybe those who have been born into a non-vegetarian background are plain unlucky, in the sense it's not that I'm superior to them. It's just that I was lucky to have been born into a family that doesn't eat, and they have been born into that. But this statement, it gives hope, it gives courage, because it is Swami saying it. And Swami says that whatever be a human nature, it can be changed. That is a special ability that has been given only to humans.
And absolutely. And I think that's the place from where we are starting here. We spoke about the health related issues and all that.
That's where we had stopped in some of the health issues we had discussed. But I think, Prem, before we go into some of the gory details, dear listeners, let me assure you that this week is going to be a few shades gorier than the previous week's satsang. So before we enter into this, maybe I think you should relate to all of our listeners Dr. Mohan's story, which is so beautiful and wonderful.
Right, you know, those listeners who listen to us regularly will know about Dr. Mohan. Dr. Mohan is the convener of the Sathya Sai Trust in Tamil Nadu. We had conversations with him before. And in fact, he was awarded one of the Padma Awards this year, and we had a conversation with him after that.
Is he that famous diabetologist?
Yes, Dr. Mohan's diabetology clinic, which is there in Chennai, is very famous. And he is one of the foremost diabetologists in the country. And this person, he actually came to Swami much later, towards the 1990s, after he had actually become a very successful diabetologist. And yeah, to straight away tell the thing that he was a non-vegetarian and he was a social drinker also. That's what he would, he shared with us. And after he came to Swami, he first gave up his drinking habit. But he still was a non-vegetarian. And here is a doctor, a diabetologist, and an expert at that. And he was finding no difficulty in eating non-vegetarian food. So, understandably, his medical knowledge did not really wean him away from the habit. So it's not absolutely so very bad a habit like compared to smoking or drinking, in that sense.
Correct.
A compulsive smoker or a compulsive drinker.
The thing is, I feel smoking and drinking are more impactful and immediate in their health effects compared to meat. Means if you ensure that the meat is clean, it's well cooked and eaten in small amounts, apparently there seems to be no danger, because if you talk of cholesterol and other things, those stuff can come even from fried foods which are vegetarian. So I feel in that sense maybe non-vegetarianism seems lesser among the three vices, that is other two being drinking and smoking.
Right. And in fact, talking about health, the reason why we're going to talk of non-vegetarian food as a non-healthy food is because non-vegetarian food is recommended because of health reasons. So if you're going to put, you know, for health and against health, you will find that it does more harm than benefit. So that is why even when talking from the angle of health, it might not be the right kind of food. So coming back to Dr. Mohan's, and here was he a non-vegetarian. And very early after his association with Swami, he was made one of the trustees in that trust in Tamil Nadu.
Okay.
And that was a time, I think you would be aware, there was Mr. G.K. Raman.
Oh,
one
yes.
of the senior most devotees of Swami from Chennai. And he was the convener of the trust.
And his demise happened
right.
at Onam. Prem, if you don't mind, I will just take 2 minutes off.
Yeah, I think you should.
It's a detour, but 2008, 2009, I'm a little confused about the years. But G.K. Raman, sir, I remember he had one of the most glorious deaths ever. And I really wish that if at all I have a death, it should be something like that. I'm sure I have a death, but it should be something like that. Because, you know, it was the day of Onam, the festival for the people from Kerala. Mm-hmm. And G.K. Raman used to, because he was the convener of the Satya Sai Trust in Tamil Nadu, he had a place in the veranda, what we call as a VIP place. He was seated there. That morning, Swami came for darshan and on the wheelchair, and he took the usual route, ladies' side, through the students in the center, then the gents' side. And as this was happening, Mr. G.K. Raman's neighbor, who was sitting beside him, saw that G.K. Raman was very, looking very tired and weak, and he asked him, "Did you have proper sleep last night?" Apparently, he had not had a proper sleep. So he told him that, you know, the major part of the program is in the evening today. So why don't you just go home, take some rest, and then come back for the evening? Mr. G.K. Raman told him, no, I have to have darshan. I will have darshan and then I'll go home. These were not the exact words, but he spoke words to this effect, that I shall have darshan and then only I shall go. Little did the neighbor realize the gravity of the words that he spoke. And I remember this because I was in the portico that day, taking photographs, and in anticipation of Swami entering the portico, mm-hmm. I went into the portico. Okay. In fact, when Swami was passing by the primary school students, that is the last area Swami passes by before coming onto the portico and the dais.
Right.
So the children were all rising up like waves in an ocean, you know. It was so beautiful, that scene. And Swami is passing by them. So I thought I'll get a good photograph of Swami along with all the kids. The front lines rising up, the back line. It's an energetic picture. After that, as Swami turned into the portico, G.K. Raman sir, you know, he just prostrated and he fell. That was it, you know. It was so sudden and so surprising. First, nobody around understood what was happening. Then suddenly they observed that he lay down to prostrate and he is not getting up. So in those few moments, they all crowded around and they saw that his eyes were closed, and Swami also came towards him. He sat there. Swami was so calm. He just sent word for his son, G.K. Raman's son. And he came, his son came. Swami told him, go get a glass of water. And Swami made the son put the few drops of water onto G.K. Raman's lips. G.K. Raman's eyes opened weakly, a little bit maybe. And then that's it. He was gone. And I remember that day, Swami cancelled the morning programs and he himself supervised the funeral and other arrangements for Mr. G.K. Raman. Watching this whole episode, you get that smashana vairagya, they say, right? They say, no, I mean, like, nothing else in life seems to be so important, because you see how transient life is, how ephemeral this life is, for which you pay so much emphasis, so much planning you do, so many things you do for life, but it may be taken away from you in a moment, and that moment could be any time. It brings to mind Shankaracharya's shloka, you know, Ma Kuru Dhana Jana Yavana Garvam. Don't be proud of your wealth, your progeny, your youth, or anything. Harati Nimeshat Kala Sarvam. It has two meanings, you know, this line. One meaning is, time has the ability to suck away all this in a moment. Kalaha also means death. Death can take all this away in a moment. That is the power and poignancy of death, and that is why there is this smashana vairagya, the detachment that comes when you see death. Really, if we can keep that vairagya always, it'll help us lead a peaceful and more joyful life. But anyway, because you mentioned G.K. Raman sir in your narrative, I remembered this, and this is really a kind of death that anyone will wish for. Death at the lotus feet of the Lord, when not only in a spiritual sense, even in a physical sense, you're at the lotus feet.
I'm sure the individual would definitely wish for a death like this, but the office bearers were not ready for a death like this, because suddenly the convener's post was made vacant.
And he was he's a very, very, very active member.
Right, very active member. He's been an industrialist, and he's got that loads of experience with which he was driving the whole trust. And here was this on just one day, you know, that seat was vacant. Nobody was prepared for that post. You know, if he was an elderly person, but nobody was being nurtured for
groomed for that,
taking over that mantle. So here was this sudden vacancy. So the trustees went up to Swami and they said, Swami, you'll have to appoint somebody as a convener. And Swami said, yeah, I will do. I'll appoint. A couple of weeks passed and still Swami was not giving any names. And they went with a few names to Swami and said, Swami, these are the probables from the trustees. Swami should pick up one of them to be the convener. And Swami again said, yeah, I will tell you. So months passed and Swami was not telling anything. And one of the contenders was, of course, Dr. Mohan, whom we're talking about. So when this was going on, and suddenly you can imagine the number of checks were piling up, the number of decisions that had to be made by
the
convener, which was lagging behind. So one day it happened that they went up to Swami and said, Swami, you have to give us a name because the situation is quite critical. So Swami said, I'll give you in a couple of days. And that was around the same time Dr. Mohan had visited Puttaparthi. He had had Swami's darshan and he was returning back. And he just picked a couple of books from the book trust, which he could read on his way back home in the car. So one of the books which he carried with him was a book called Swami and Food.
Okay.
So being a doctor, I'm sure he would have been interested in that theme. So when he was reading through that book, he came across this one line, which he felt was written straight for him. Mm-hmm. And it just accidentally he picked up that line, and the line went something like, Swami saying in first person, I have done so much for you. I have fulfilled all your prayers. And in return, all I ask of you is one thing, to give up non-vegetarian food.
Oh my God.
Why aren't you able to do that for me? And these were the words. He read it again, he closed the book, and I'm sure that very moment he would have made the resolve that he is going to get off the car a vegetarian. And that's exactly what happened. He went home, he told his wife that I'm going to give up eating non-vegetarian food because I read a book like this. And he said, it's not just a book, it's written for me, and I really feel it, because, you know, everything in that sentence was true.
One point over here, Prem. That is the magic of Swami's communication, you know. When Swami decides to communicate with you, there can be no doubt. Oftentimes people think, Swami told this to me in the dream. Is it meant for me to follow? I heard the discourse. Is it for me? You know, sometimes these cases, I mean, these people, they have asked me also whether, what do you think? What do you think? Do you think Swami is trying to indicate this to me? And my reply to them has always been, please don't ask me to interpret Swami for you. When Swami communicates something to you, my experience has been that it is crystal clear. The whole world may find 100 arguments as to why that is not Swami's message. And yet, you will not be shaken because it is so crystal clear, and it is a feeling, it's an experience. It is not anything related to the head, it is something related to the heart. That's why that silent conviction is often louder than the blaring voices of the head. At the same time, if you are not convinced that it is Swami, then even if 100 arguments are presented to you, your heart will just not agree. So that is the magical thing about Swami's communication. And so I can totally understand and empathize with Dr. Mohan when he says that sentence was from the book was Swami talking to me directly.
In fact, there's another incident, I'll narrate that after I complete this thing,
okay,
where communication was even more straightforward and even more direct.
Okay.
Completing Dr. Mohan's account, you know, so he went back home and he told his wife that he's going to give up vegetarian, going to become a vegetarian. I think his wife also followed suit. And needless to say, he's a vegetarian till day. So after that incident happened, a couple of days later, in the morning he had finished his bath, he was doing his puja, and he came out, he got a phone call.
Okay.
So he picked up the call, and it was the All India President, Mr.
Srinivasan,
was on the line. And he was talking to him in whispers. He says, Dr. Mohan, I'm just coming from Swami's interview room. Swami asked me to ask you, are you ready to take up the post of the convener?
Of the Tamil Nadu,
of the Tamil Nadu Trust. Okay. Trust. And, you know, he never expected that. He was not, he did not think that he was a forerunner for the post also. He knew that his name was there in the list, but he really didn't expect that he would be asked and to be picked directly by Swami. So he was a little, flabbergasted, and his wife was asking him, you know, what is the thing about?
So Mr. V. Srinivasan was speaking in a whisper because he was just coming out of the interview room.
Yeah, he just came out of the interview room and he was, okay. I think, still in the mandir.
Okay.
So Dr. Mohan very frantically told his wife, this is what Mr. Srinivasan is asking me. And his wife started yelling at him, take it, take it, take it. Don't think twice, take it, she said. And, you know, one side his wife is saying this, and one side, you know, Medra Srinivasan is asking, Mr. Srinivasan is asking for his answer. So he said, sir, can I think over it? And Mr. Srinivasan says, no, you'll have to tell me right now because I have to go back to the interview room and tell Swami. Swami is waiting for your answer.
Oh, God. that is amazing. Okay.
And then Dr. Mohan's wife says, take it. No, don't think twice. So he says, yes. And so the message is conveyed to Swami and Swami makes him. The interesting aside in this is he asked the wife, why were you yelling at me to take it? And then the wife explained. She said, see, suppose you are going to be selected for the Nobel Prize.
Okay.
Who is going to select you? He said, there's going to be a panel of doctors and experts and scientists who are going to select you. So she said, fine. If you're going to be selected for the Bharat Ratna or some award like that, who's going to select you? He said, again, an expert panel of men and women of eminence. So then, she asked, you're being selected for the convener. Who has selected you?
God.
Then it struck him, you know, Swami is selected. God is selected. He says, you will accept every other accolade which comes, which is a selection by men and women. Here is God selecting you for something. Will you say no? So then he was so thankful that he followed his wife's command. And then when he reflected, he realized that his name actually was proposed to Swami as the main contender for that post months before.
Oh, but he got to know that later on.
Yeah, and Swami was just putting it off for so many months. And the moment he decided that, Swami, I'm going to become a vegetarian, he said Swami was waiting only for that decision of mine.
Oh.
And the moment that decision was made, Swami said, now you're ready. Become the convener.
And Swami worked out this miracle of his as a coincidence.
Absolutely.
It seemed like the minute he gave up, within a few days, he is the convener. Looking back at that incident now, you feel that is so logical. Imagine an office bearer in the organization who is non-vegetarian. Swami will definitely frown upon that because, as we have heard the two discourse clips yesterday, not yesterday, the last week, Swami is absolutely clear. It is non-negotiable completely. No way where any kind of exclusion can be made when it comes to meat. So, beautiful. So with that, dear listeners, we will quickly go through some of the other, you know, health related issues because of which a vegetarian diet would prove to be best. Last week we had gone through some of them. One was, of course, that the adrenaline of the terrorized animals is only partially broken down in the meat, and therefore that adrenaline, that chemical, is ingested and it gives rise to passions and anger in our body. Apart from this, we also discussed on biomagnification, where the concentration of harmful insecticides and poisons increases almost 10 times or 100 times in the body of a person who takes non-vegetarian diet compared to that of a person who takes a vegetarian diet.
And there's another interesting thing, you know, there's always so much hype around that word cholesterol. Everybody's scared of that, and you have so innumerable number of advertisements on TV which says that, you know, low cholesterol, zero cholesterol, 10% cholesterol and all that. The interesting thing is, you know, there are two types of cholesterol in the body. I'm not an expert at this. I'm just going to share it in a very general manner of information. There are two types of cholesterol. There's supposed to be a good cholesterol and a bad cholesterol. And in the medical terms, it's called low density and high density cholesterol. The high density cholesterol is supposed to be the good cholesterol because it can be removed away from the body. And the low density cholesterol is that which gets into the bloodstream and can clog the arteries. Interestingly, there are very, very few plant products which can actually give you the bad cholesterol.
Okay.
In fact, hardly any.
Okay.
All cholesterol is actually manufactured in the animal body. So most of the cholesterol which we are talking about is, even if you're going to take some plant-based oil, the oil gets processed in the body and forms cholesterol which is harmful.
Oh, the oil as such does not
the
contain...
The oil as such does not contain bad cholesterol. And the only way you can... I mean, there is no way you can get good cholesterol from animal products. The only cholesterol which you get from animal products is the bad cholesterol.
Apart from what cholesterol we make in the body,
right,
we get an additional input of bad cholesterol from the animals.
Yeah, so that also explains some of the advertisements which say zero cholesterol for animal-based, I mean...
Exactly, you know, that was a thought.
Plant-based oils, actually there is no way there can be cholesterol in a plant oil.
That was a thought that struck me, Prem, that all these oil companies, I mean vegetable oil companies, they advertise saying that it contains zero cholesterol. They're actually throwing on our face a straight fact and making fools of us.
Right.
There's no way a vegetable oil can contain cholesterol. But because of that fact, they just pick it up and use it as an advertising or marketing idea.
In fact, Swami himself in a couple of discourses has spoken about the value of eating coconut. Because
okay.
Coconut is supposed to be a very, very good source of good cholesterol.
Hmm.
In fact, Swami has said that is why you offer coconut as prasadam and then you eat it. Because
okay.
The ancients knew that that could be, you know, a good way of packaging a good product in your diet.
Wow. All our rituals too have so much inner significance.
Right.
It's only up to us to discover. Another point that came to my mind when this cholesterol theme is going on is that when my father had this heart attack, you know, it was another story by itself how Swami protected and saved and ensured that it's done fine without a surgery, mm-hmm. and it's just exercise and diet control. During that time, I was speaking to Dr. Iyer,
okay.
from the he's the HOD,
one of the senior most cardiologists
in the super specialty.
Right.
So he was saying that every person has blocked arteries.
Mm-hmm.
My father had a 60% block, and it led to an attack. So I was telling him that, oh my God, my father has kept accumulating. He told me, my dear fellow, even your own blood vessels will be at up to 30 to 40% blocked. It's just that you don't realize it, and only when it gets 60 or more percent blocked does it result in a cardiac stroke. In fact, if you go into what actually a cardiac stroke is, there are muscles in the human body, and
mm-hmm.
these muscles are everywhere.
Right.
And they are supplied by the arteries. Now, when the artery gets these deposits of cholesterol, the blood supply to them reduces. It's just like a pipe getting blocked.
Right.
Now, if the cardiac muscle's blood supply is reduced, then the oxygen reaching the cardiac muscles reduces, because of which the cardiac muscles are not able to function. And that is what is a cardiac stroke. If it happens to any other muscle, it doesn't affect as much. But when it happens to a cardiac muscle, it stops, and if the heart beating stops, it affects the whole body. And because of the stroke, it's like a lack of oxygen to the cardiac muscles, to the heart muscles, because of which the heart muscles may weaken or die.
Mm-hmm.
And if they weaken or die, your heart cannot perform to its full ability. And that is why the whole body suffers. So that is what is a cardiac stroke.
Okay.
But Dr. Iyer was saying that almost everybody, because of the food habits and because of our sedentary lifestyle, has about 30 to 40% blocked arteries. So, we are in sufficient danger without adding any more further danger by eating meat. It is not as if because I have not had meat, I can eat a little meat and it's okay. Even without eating meat, by the natural process, because of our lifestyle, because of our sedentary lifestyle, even in an active lifestyle, some amount of deposition anyway happens. Why do you want to accelerate it by eating meat? So even a little meat once in a week, twice a month, even that is harmful. That is what he was saying.
Exactly. And that also brings down some vegetarians who might be floating in the air, because you could do enough harm to yourself by not eating non-vegetarian food also. We'll come to that a little later, where Swami speaks about general food habits, if we have time for that or for some other time. But, you know, in a general sense, this does prove that non-vegetarian food does not do any benefit to your health.
I'll give you a simple example. Forget all the scientific theories or everything. Let's take business companies. You know, business is cutthroat. Capitalism is surely based on money. Just go and do a Yahoo search or a Google search or an MSN, any search that you want. Why on earth will life insurance companies give greater discounts and cheaper premiums to vegetarians? Simply because they see greater life expectancy among vegetarians. All other factors being kept equal, if all other factors are same, then if a person is vegetarian, there are many companies out there offering greater discounts and cheaper premiums. Does that not prove that it is healthier than a non-vegetarian diet?
And another misconception, I think we partly dealt with it last week, where people say that what about proteins? You're supposed to get proteins from animal food. And then Swami, in that discourse clip, said that you can get proteins from other plant sources also. An interesting talk I was hearing sometime back, in that he says, why this kind of an argument does not hold water anymore.
Okay.
Now, he said that in certain parts in America, he was basically talking about the American continent, you have states like Texas, where predominantly you have, earlier there used to be farms and animals were raised there. There predominantly the agriculture, all the vegetation there would be grassland. You won't have paddy, and you won't have
legumes or protein
plants
or
fruit or vegetable yielding plants. They were mostly grasslands. So in places like that, the only source of protein would be that the livestock eat the grass and you eat the livestock and get your protein supplement from there.
Okay,
and so this was fine. So you had small size farms and small size people rearing these farm animals and then providing for your protein through that. But then he said what happened was industrialization progressed. Then you had railways going all through the country.
Hmm.
So now the food which is produced in one part of the country could travel to the other part of the country.
Which means now proteins can be delivered at Texas also.
Right. So now what was actually a means of protein became the only means of protein. So in that sense, for Texas, yes, the only means of protein was through the livestock, because they didn't have legumes and, as you said, the other animal, other plant products. But now, even the other states which actually had proteins in the form of all these other legumes and, your lentils and all that, now they started looking for animal products for their proteins.
Oh my God, Prem, when you were narrating this, I was thinking what happened was that now the transport is available, the people in Texas, what you took, will be now able to get proteins from all other places.
Right.
Plant proteins.
Right. That should have been the right thing to do, but it was the other way around.
They started sending the meat out.
Right. So now what happened is, the amount of people who were dependent on meat for their daily diet increased and spread all through the country. So in the north, or in places where, you don't get animal meat or red meat, as they would call it, they started getting it because they were able to get it shipped from the southernmost states. So now when you say that, you need to look for proteins in animal food, it's not necessary, because we are so well connected. Technology has brought us to a state where you can get protein from food which does not grow in your native, region.
If we look at the other thing, that is disease outbreaks, in recent times I think we have had avian flu, we have had mad cow disease, we have had SARS, okay, and all these have been scientifically established to have arisen because of non-vegetarian food. I remember one historical case, in class we were told about it. It's called the Minamata disaster. It took place in Japan, I think.
Right.
Because of mercury poisoning. Though the actual cause, they say, is mercury poisoning, why did this disease spread among people? People died out in hundreds and thousands. It spread because of their predominantly fish diet. If you were vegetarian, there was no way Minamata disease could have spread. Actually, if you look at the history of the world, I don't think there is hardly any epidemic that spreads in human beings because of eating vegetarian food. You may eat a spoiled fruit, you may eat a spoiled vegetable or a diseased potato blight plant. Of course, it will taste bad and you may get indigestion, you may get some small problems. But they are nowhere compared to the kind of infestations and infections and diseases that spread like epidemics, which happens in the case of non-vegetarian food. So, apart from this, there's also the bacterial infections that take place. E. coli, salmonella, all these parasites, they all live, they parasite upon animals. And we are ingesting them and introducing them into human bodies artificially. In fact, by consuming non-vegetarian food, I think we are increasing the number of diseases that humans are subject to.
In fact, you know, this is also because of the point which we started with when you spoke of greed. And in fact, there is a school of thought in the West which says that vegetarian food is still good if it is coming from small farms. Okay, which is
non-vegetarian food,
which is in fact in a sense right, but is something which is not practical anymore in the situation we have got ourselves into. You know, it's because, as I said, the predominant food for the livestock was, you know, when they go out to graze and they eat the things which otherwise man cannot eat.
Nowadays we are feeding them human food.
Now what has happened is you give them corn, you give them food which will make them, which will fatten them fast.
In fact, there were reports that some places they are even fed meat.
Right.
Cows are being fed meat.
Yeah, that is the source of the foot and mouth disease which they've come to. But the other sense, even if you give them things like corn and other things, you know, what they're saying is, see, they are their digestive system is used to a certain kind of food, which has suddenly been changed in a span of few decades. So which means the digestive system of cows and the other livestock are not really geared up to actually process this food as much as it is used to processing the other food, which is naturally its diet. Mm. So now you're eating that flesh. So that also is a reason why non-vegetarian food is not healthy.
That actually takes us to another point, Prem, which is the abnormal growth in these animals that are being foodstuffs which are not meant for them. Just like eating junk food results in us becoming obese,
right,
and having a growth which is not good growth, actually bad growth, the same thing happens to the animals also. Now we have covered at least 3 points from last week. One is environmental reasons why we should be vegetarian. One is socio-economic reasons why we should be vegetarian. Today we have discussed a few of the health reasons why we should be vegetarian. Now we move on to another very, very poignant point, which is a value-based reason why we should be vegetarian. See, the socio-economic reasons is something like wealth. Socio-economic reasons why, how we can increase wealth by actually being vegetarian. But you know, Swami says, if wealth is lost, nothing is lost. And then we discussed health reasons. It is important because if health is lost, something is lost. Now we come to the final thing, maybe the pre-final thing, value-based reasons, which speaks of our character actually. And Swami says, if character is lost, everything is lost. So now, dear listeners, we come on to the value-based reasons on why vegetarianism is better.
And in fact, this is, I mean, leaving aside the spiritual reasons, if we were to keep aside the spiritual reasons, this I feel would be the most important reason for which we should turn to vegetarianism. You know, given all that we said before about the environmental issues, the health issues, the socio-economic reasons, among all of them, this is the most important.
And
the compassion-based, value-based reason.
This is the most heart-wrenching thing, because when we say value-based, it's not as if you have to be a spiritual, you have to be a devotee or a God-fearing person. You just have to be a normal human being.
Exactly, because that is why Swami didn't name them spiritual values. Swami named them human values. So if you want to be a human, you should have these values.
Exactly. And I remember a quote that was made. You know, it says that if slaughterhouses, the place where these animals are killed and processed for meat industry, if slaughterhouses had glass walls, everyone would be vegetarians. And the meaning of this quote hits us when we actually see and come to know what is happening in these slaughterhouses. In fact, dear listeners, right now, we are going to play to you a 10-minute audio clip. Please gather all your nerves, all your courage, and sit through. If you have any little ones listening, maybe you can plug their ears. But then, this is actually the audio taken from a video, because the video in itself is very gory. And this, in this audio, the main speaker is
Paul McCartney. He's one of the Beatles, and he's also a person who has embraced vegetarianism. So the commentary is in his voice. And this is a video produced by PETA, which is the People's for Ethical Treatment of Animals, an organization, international organization, which is a forerunner in bringing this message to the world. It's not only about vegetarianism. They talk about veganism, that is absolutely shunning any kind of animal products, including fur and leather. So this is a documentary which has been produced by them, and as I said,
it's actually a trailer to the documentary. It's just 10 to 12 minutes, and if you wish to see the video, we got it from another non-profit organization called meat.org. It's on their homepage. All you have to do is just go to www.meat.org and see this video on their homepage. But that you can do later, maybe. Right now, we will play Paul McCartney's audio that he has lent for this. Please listen to these 10-12 minutes.
And to repeat that, repeat the disclaimer which has been said, it is not very pleasant. So we are warning you before. But yes, this is the truth. And as we said, this should be one of the most important reasons why we have to think twice before using animal products.
Hi, I'm Paul McCartney. I've often said if slaughterhouses had glass walls, everyone would be vegetarian. Animals raised on modern factory farms and killed in slaughterhouses endure almost unimaginable suffering. I hope that once you see the routine cruelty involved in raising, transporting and killing animals for food, you'll join the millions of people who've decided to leave meat off their plates for good. Chickens and turkeys are arguably the most abused animals on the face of the planet. They're crowded into filthy sheds by the tens of thousands and forced to live in their own excrement. Chickens and turkeys are selectively bred to grow so large, so fast, that many become crippled under their own weight. Workers in slaughterhouses and on mechanized farms are poorly paid, and their work often goes unmonitored. Many investigations into chicken and turkey slaughterhouses have revealed shocking cruelty that goes beyond the standard abuses, such as this recent footage from a top turkey producer. Hens used by the egg industry are crammed into cages so small that they can't do anything that is natural or important to them, not even spread a single wing. The ends of their sensitive beaks are cut off with a hot blade, causing chronic pain that studies have shown lasts for more than a month. Chickens are intelligent animals whose ability to reason in some instances is greater than that of dogs and children. Chickens are also very social animals with an elaborate pecking order or social ranking system. Yet hens used by the egg industry are confined to tiny cages for their entire lives. This causes their muscles to waste away and their bones to deteriorate and break from lack of use. Their feet become lacerated and their bodies bruised and cut from standing on wire for 18 months before they're sent to the slaughterhouse. At the end of their miserable lives, chickens and turkeys are forcefully packed into crowded cages and transported for hours through all types of weather conditions without food or water. At the slaughterhouse, these birds' legs are forced into shackles and their throats are cut, many while they are still completely conscious. P. Pigs are more intelligent than dogs, even outperforming some primates on a variety of tasks, such as operating interactive video games. They have cognitive abilities beyond those of 3-year-old human children. Yet, on factory farms, they are imprisoned in crowded, filthy conditions. Many will go insane from the stress, abuse, and complete lack of mental stimulation. Breeding sows are treated like machines, forced to churn out litter after litter. They give birth in barren stalls without enough room even to nuzzle their piglets. Conditions are so dismal in today's pig breeding facilities that the sickness and death of piglets is common and considered acceptable by the industry. Pigs are bred to grow unnaturally fast, which causes injury, sickness, and constant pain. They are then subjected to grueling transport before being killed. Stunning by the electrical tongue method is unreliable, which means that many pigs remain completely conscious while their throats are cut. Cows never forget a face or a place, and they have complex problem-solving skills. Cambridge University Professor Donald Broom documented the fact that these gentle animals become excited and sometimes even jump into the air when they've figured out a solution to a problem. Cattle used for meat and milk are fed an unnatural diet to maximize growth and milk output that causes them to be constantly bloated and in pain. During the winter, they're crowded into filthy, congested sheds in much the same way as pigs and chickens, and in some cases, they're even kept indoors all year round. Female cows produce milk for their offspring, not for human beings. Mother cows in the dairy industry are kept perpetually pregnant to keep the milk flowing. Their calves are taken away from them shortly after birth, which causes both of them profound distress. On today's dairy farms, mother cows are treated as nothing more than milk machines. Some are genetically manipulated to produce 10 times more milk than their calves would naturally suckle. Several times per day, they're hooked up to these machines, which can cause painful mastitis from repeated milking. When they're no longer useful for milk production, they too are sent to slaughter, usually to be ground up for burgers and soups. Whether they're raised for meat or milk, cattle endure a harrowing journey to slaughter at the end of their lives. Some don't even survive the trip. As with pigs, the stun gun is often ineffective, causing even more agony. Ritual slaughter is at least as cruel as conventional slaughter methods. The meat from these animals was certified as kosher by the largest kosher certifier in the world, the Orthodox Union. There is a scientific consensus that fish are intelligent and have distinct individual personalities. They can use tools and have sophisticated memories. Dr. Sylvia Earle, a leading marine biologist, says, "I never eat anyone I know personally. I wouldn't deliberately eat a grouper any more than I'd eat a cocker spaniel." They're so good-natured, so curious. You know, fish are sensitive. They have personalities. They hurt when they're wounded. They also feel pain in the same way as mammals do. And yet, they're killed by the billions in ways that would be illegal with any other species. Massive trawling nets capture hundreds of tons of animals as they're dragged along the ocean floor. And when they're hauled onto the ships, the animals suffer from decompression, are suffocated, or are crushed under the massive weight of all the other bodies. Dolphins, whales, turtles, and non-target fish, or what the fishing industry calls bycatch, are all routinely snared by hooks and entangled in nets, their bodies dumped back into the ocean. Environmental scientists are sounding the alarm about the tragic state of the world's oceans. If we continue the fishing industry's rape of the oceans at the current rate, marine scientists tell us that the oceans will be empty of fish by the year 2048. Aquaculture, or underwater factory farming, is also horribly abusive to animals. Fish are forced to swim in their own waste in congested, toxic cesspools. Disease is rampant. Conditions on some farms are so horrendous that 40% of the fish die before farmers are ready to kill and package them as food. Fish consumption is the number one cause of food poisoning and the only significant means by which humans are exposed to mercury, a documented poison that causes a wide range of neurological problems. Whether the flesh comes from an animal with four legs, two legs, or no legs, all meat is truly red meat. Modern meat production is responsible for recent outbreaks of mad cow disease, SARS, bird flu, and other diseases. And animal products are also often contaminated with a bacterial stew of Campylobacter, Salmonella, and E. coli. The consumption of animal flesh, all of which is riddled with fat and cholesterol, is also a prime contributor to today's epidemics of obesity, heart disease, and cancer. Studies show that vegetarians are less prone to all of these diseases. And if you care about the environment, please know that according to United Nations scientists, eating meat generates about 40% more greenhouse gases, the gases that cause climate change, than all the world's transportation systems combined. The UN report also states that eating meat is one of the top contributors to land degradation, water shortages, and air and water pollution. If we care about the environment, cutting meat out of our diet is the most important action we can take. It is only prejudice that allows anyone to think there's a difference between abusing a cat and abusing a chicken, or abusing a dog and abusing a pig. Suffering is suffering, no matter how you slice it. Eating meat is bad for our health. It's bad for the environment, and it directly supports appalling cruelty to animals. The decision is yours. Please make the compassionate choice. And please share this with a friend. Thank you.
Well, Prem, that must have been really tough. Dear listeners, you know, we have our monitors here constantly monitoring the number of listeners that have logged in. And along this audio clip, we lost at least about 30 listeners. And we can totally understand. It was very painful for us, but sometimes one has to speak the inconvenient truth. And when we are looking at reasons as to why Swami is totally against, we are nobody to say that these are the exact reasons, But these are the probable reasons, and this is something that wrenched the heart out of us. And in order to, you know, win back those listeners or cheer up those who held on strong and heard the whole thing, here's one nice anecdote. You know, Prem, I was remembering, you know, when we think of giving up, sacrificing for the Lord, there we are convinced that, you know, love is equal to sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that is not involving love, not involving sacrifice. Sacrifice means it should pinch. That's why even when it came to Narayan Seva, Swami said it is not enough if you just spend some money, throw a few dollars, buy rice and give it to the poor. He says that you must, from your food, from your plate, keep aside a little. So that you experience a bit of that hunger. You are able to empathize better with what the other person is going through. When your stomach is 80% full, you feel, oh God, I wish I can eat a little more. Then imagine a person who is 100% empty. And that is a sacrifice that has to be made, and that is why Swami used to even say at times that take one fistful of food from your own plate and keep it aside for doing Narayan Seva. That is true Narayan Seva. For love is love only when it involves sacrifice, because then only you are able to feel one. Otherwise it is almost like a superior giving an inferior. You can just throw around dollar notes. That doesn't satisfy the hunger. Well, so coming to this point of sacrifice, there are so many things that we decide to give up eating. I was reminded of this incident of Dr. Hanumanthappa.
Mm-hmm.
He had been to Kashi and he had been to all these holy places. And as is the norm, when you visit these places, you are supposed to sacrifice something for the Lord. This is somewhat like a custom. For example, when you go to Tirupati in Andhra Pradesh, it's one of the most famous temples in the world. There people give up their hair. You know, it has many different meanings. Swami had said once that it is the symbolic giving up of tamas.
Right.
Some others feel that, you know, it's a sense of pride. You know, we have hairstyles and it's a kind of ego boost.
Mm-hmm.
You are ready to sacrifice your ego to the Lord. And there are different meanings. So like this, you are supposed to sacrifice something for the Lord when you visit a holy place. Now, when Dr. Hanumanthappa had been there to Kashi, he decided to give up eating cucumber. And if you ask why, he did not like cucumber. So he thought he may as well give it up for the sake of the Lord. And he had done that. And he, when he came back after his pilgrimage in Vrindavan, Swami invited him for a lunch session along with him. And this is a great privilege, sharing the same dining table as the Lord. That day, Dr. Hanumanthappa noticed that among the several dishes that had been made was one cucumber dish. And he just went back to his resolve that he will not be eating cucumber anymore, because he has given it up for the Lord. You know, he has sacrificed it for the Lord. So when the person serving came to him, he said, no, I will not have this. At that very point, Swami says, oh, you're not having this. It is very tasty. Have tasted a little bit. Then he says, no, Swami, I'm fine. No, you must have it. It's very tasty and it's also very good dish. You know, cucumber is very good. Swami extolled the virtues of the cucumber. And Hanumanthappa is still refusing. He's saying, no, Swami, I don't want it. Swami almost became obstinately insistent. And Hanumanthappa had no escape route to wriggle out of the situation. So finally he agreed. And one spoon of that cucumber dish was served into his plate.
Mm-hmm.
And then Swami said, eat. Swami not only was insistent on it being served into his plate, Swami also wanted him to eat. And, you know, Swami was saying, eat, tell me how it is, eat, tell me, is it not good? The minute Hanumanthappa picked up and put a few first morsel into his mouth, the teacher who narrated this incident to us, he was saying that Swami literally jumped up from his chair, clapping his hand in joy, saying that, see, I made you eat it. And then Swami tells Hanumanthappa, you know, the day you took a resolve there, never to eat cucumber, that day itself I decided I'll make you eat cucumber.
I took a resolve to make you eat.
You know, in his beautiful, loving style, you know, it is so clear that when you are giving up something for the Lord, give up something that matters. We are ready to give up cucumber, we are ready to give up radish, we are ready to give up, I'm ready to give up bitter gourd, you know. But you tell me to give up sweet, I find it so tough, because sweet is something I love, and bitter gourd, anyway I will not eat it. I would rather go hungry than eat bitter gourd. So what is so great about sacrificing bitter gourd? Don't call it a sacrifice. It's just convenient tricking. why don't we decide to give up non-vegetarian food?
In fact, you know, going back to comparing what you said with the reason why we should give up using, eating non-vegetarian food. In 1931, when Mahatma Gandhi was in London, he was invited to speak in a meeting which was organized by the London Vegetarian Society.
Hmm.
You know, there he spoke about the health benefits of being a vegetarian and all that. And he also spoke about the advantage of that he had of being born into a family which was predominantly vegetarian. He said Indians, most of them are vegetarian, because that time most of Indians could not afford non-vegetarian food, because we spoke of the socio-economic reasons why it's preferable to be a vegetarian.
Cheaper, yes.
But he said, see, these are not the reasons why you should become a vegetarian.
Mm.
He said, yes, there are health benefits, but don't become a vegetarian for selfish reasons. He said, because if you take up vegetarianism because of something which is selfish, then you have the ability to fall off when, you know, maybe you're economically more, it becomes more affordable to you. So he said, you know, one of the statements which he made there, a wonderful statement, he said, I discovered that for remaining staunch to vegetarianism, a man requires a moral basis. Selfish basis would not serve the purpose of taking a man higher and higher along the path of evolution. What was required was an altruistic purpose. And then he goes on to say, the basis of my vegetarianism is not physical, it is moral. If anybody said, and I should die if I did not take, let's say, beef, tea or mutton, even on medical advice, I would prefer death. That is the basis of my vegetarianism. Because, I mean, I should not be living on the loss of somebody. I mean, let's say that we go out in the society and you are being burgled by a man. He says, no, I have to live. I don't have any other money. I have to take your money and live on it. You know, that's precisely what we're saying. That, you know, I need your protein. You better die for me. I mean, how can that be morally right?
Correct.
And how can we say that it is right if a pig or a goat dies, because that is important for me to live? That's as much as rationalizing somebody who's killing for his livelihood or who's stealing for his livelihood.
Exactly, Prem. And you know, at this point, I would also like to quote from Swami's discourse. Sadly, dear listeners, we don't have this audio because of whatever reasons. And this was a discourse that Swami delivered on the 7th of February, 1993. It was during a cardiovascular conference where there were doctors. And Swami there openly said, he said, many doctors emphasize the value of proteins and recommend meat, eggs, etc. But proteins got in this form serve only to build the body and do considerable harm to the mind. Doctors are primarily concerned with the gross physical body. They pay little attention to the subtle form of the mental makeup. Most of the diseases that are prevalent in the world today are related to the mind. Mental illness outnumbers physical ailments. End of quote. You know, Prem, that is what we are talking about. The mind, the heart. Forget the physical reasons. Physical reasons, we have already found enough reasons why we should not consume non-vegetarian food. But what Swami is saying is exactly what Mahatma Gandhi had said then, that there is a very strong moral basis. And this statement, I find it so, so poignant. We can even meditate on it. When Swami says that the greatest diseases prevalent in the world today are mental diseases, problem diseases of the mind. Because, you know, physical diseases we can find cure. We can have even vaccines to ensure that they do not come up again. But mental diseases of greed, selfishness, cruelty, inhumanness, there seems to be no medicine in sight right away. And these diseases stand on the brink of enveloping and destroying mankind and the whole earth itself.
And talking about cruelty and inflicting pain, one argument which would often prop up is, aren't plants alive? Don't they have feelings? Because there is another science of botany which is proving that plants can feel, feel your emotions. If you are rude to them, they can react accordingly.
Yes, and even in Paramahamsa Yogananda's book, he talks about a saint, Therese Newman, I think. I don't know if I may be wrong with the name, but she grows thornless flowers.
Right.
Because she says thornless rose flowers. Because she grows them with love, the rose plant doesn't see a need to put out thorns to defend itself. And Jagdish Chandra Bose, an Indian scientist, is credited to have discovered, I think, the crescograph, which can measure plant emotions and feelings. And that is where all this comes from, that you are injuring plants which have feelings. So how is that different from injuring animals?
Right. And Swami gives a very, very simple answer for that.
Mm-hmm.
Swami says, animals have a central nervous system, plants do not have it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it, a central nervous system is that which actually transmits pain.
From different parts of the body to the brain.
A cut in your finger, why are you feeling it? A pain is always in the mind, as they say, no, pain is in the mind. Because if the mind is detached from the body, any amount of harm which is done to the body is not felt by the mind. So,
By
the brain. So that which is being transmitted, that which helps in this transmission of the pain is the central nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, the plants do not have a central nervous system. So they will not have, they don't have the pain which is, traveling all through the body, like how an animal would feel when it is being killed.
I remember one of these carnival magicians, they do amazing things, but this carnival magician used to do something very gory. He would give out a warning and say that children, mothers and fathers, hide your children. And what he would basically do is one part of his left hand, he would pick up and he would slice it through. He would poke a needle right through it or poke a knife through it. It would bleed, but then he'll stop the bleeding and that's it. No pain at all. What had actually happened was, due to some accident, the nerves in that region of his hand had got damaged. And he, being a carnival magician, had exploited it to his advantage, because pain from there is not transferred to him any longer. And therefore, he can poke it as much as he wants. It'll bleed. And that's why, after the show, they treat it, they medicate it, they put balm so that it doesn't get infected. But he has no pain at all. And I think that highlights what you were saying about the central nervous system. It is because of the central nervous system that even the slightest nick on a finger of mine, I am able to feel it and it can throb. It will not allow me to sleep. And this central nervous system is absent in the plants. Therefore, when you pluck a leaf or a flower, nothing happens. Another flower comes in its place, another leaf comes in its place. As long as you don't destroy the plant. And even if you take the plant, one thing is, yes, it doesn't feel the pain because there is nothing like a brain, there is nothing like a spinal cord which transmits it to a central organ. And the other thing is, when you have to eat meat, 100% of the time, without exception, the animal is killed. But when we go to the plants, for that matter, very, very few cases, like maybe in the case of the banana or some of the plants, where the plant is actually killed uprooted for the fruit or vegetable or the grain to be harvested. Otherwise, all of the time, it's just the harvest that takes place and the plant continues to grow and it coexists, just like you have the mangoes or the apples or other things. So, two arguments there which defeat this pain argument. One thing is, the plant feels no pain because of the lack of a central nervous system so beautifully defined by Swami. And of course, every scientist will vouch for that. And the second thing is, very small percentage of plants are actually uprooted in cases like banana, where actually it's a need. Right, Prem?
Right, very true. And very idea that we are here trying to be good people. Forget spiritual people. We're trying to be good people, cause least harm to people and the things and life forms around us. That itself warrants us to have the least impact on the people and things around us. Why would you have to live a life which actually causes pain and some kind of bereavement for the life forms around you? That moral reason is what Mahatma Gandhi said and Swami said. How can you claim to be calm and peaceful and non-harming if you actually continue to be a non-vegetarian?
With that, dear listeners, we will take a small break, and after the break, we will come back and wrap up this topic. We hope that you are enjoying it, but you're benefiting and it has been a learning experience for you as it has been for us. We'll meet you after this little break.
Purush Shri Hari Krishna Narayan Gopal.
Guruvayur Pur Shri Hari Krishna Narayan Gopal.
Mukunda Madhava Murali Dhari Narayan Gopal.
Mukunda Madhava Murali Dhari Narayan Gopal.
Mukunda Madhava Murali Dhari Narayan Gopal.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to Afternoon Satsang with me, Prem, and Arvind. We're talking about the value of vegetarianism. We've spoken about the many things relating to the environmental issues which are caused by, you know, the increasing consumption of non-vegetarian foods, the socio-economic reasons, the health reasons, the compassion-based reasons why we should give them up. Finally, we come to the concluding part. We are not going to go very deep into it because it's a topic which will consume her entire session by itself. Maybe sometime in the future we will do that, about what Swami says about consumption of food, which is how it is related to one's spiritual journey. But we're going to take a part of that and say why Swami insists on eating vegetarian food for a spiritual aspirant. So maybe we should start with, Arvind, that small clip where Swami is saying, whether you are a devotee, whether you are an aspirant, whether you are a Sai devotee or a devotee of any form of God, why we have to abstain from eating non-vegetarian
food. He actually doesn't say why we have to, but he says that you have to. And right. This is a discourse clip from the 69th birthday, that is 1994, November 23rd.
So we'll listen to that discourse and we'll continue and conclude this satsang.
ఈనాడు ఎవరైనా సరే భగవద్భక్తులుగా కోరేటువంటి వారు, భగవద్భక్తులను విశ్వసించేటువంటి వారు,
టుడే లెట్ హిమ్ ఎనీవన్, దోస్ హు కన్సిడర్ దెమ్సెల్వ్స్ యాజ్ డివోటీస్,
మాంస భక్షణను వదలాలి.
దే షుడ్ గివ్ అప్ మీట్ ఈటింగ్.
కారణం ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ఇస్ ద రీజన్?
ఈ పశు మాంసము ఈ పశుగుణములనే పెంచుతుంది.
ద మీట్ విల్ డెవలప్ అనిమల్ క్వాలిటీ.
హిందువులో చెప్తారు, జేసే అన్నే ఐసే మన్.
As is the food, so is the mind.
ఎలాంటి తిండో అలాంటి ప్రేపు.
As is the food, so is the belt.
మామిడి పండు తింటే దోసకాయ చేపు వస్తుందా?
When you eat mango, you don't have belt of cucumber.
కనుక మేము ఈ దుర్మార్గమైనటువంటి గుణములతో కూడినటువంటి క్రూర మృగముల యొక్క మాంసం భుజించటం చేత మనలో కూడా ఆ క్రూరత్వం అభివృద్ధి అవుతుండాలి.
When you partake the meat, you'll have animal qualities more and more.
ఇది ఒక్కటే కాదు.
Not only this.
కానీ పంచభూతములతో మనకు కనిపించే శబ్ద స్పర్శలు ప్రసంగాలతో జీవించేటువంటి యొక్క ప్రాణం తీవటము ఎంత పాపము.
What sort of a sin is it to kill an animal?
నీ గుణములు రాక్షస గుణములు కావటమే కాకుండా నీ పంచభూతముల యొక్క సమానమైనటువంటి పరప్రాణులు కూడా నేను తీవటం ఎంత పాపం.
You have got the five elements in you to kill another animal with all the five elements.
మానవునికి తాపం ఏర్పడుతుంటుంది.
When you commit such a sin, you will have all the worry.
కనుకనే నిజమైనటువంటి దైవ భక్తులు కాబోయేటువంటి వారు, కావాలని ఆశించేటువంటి వారు మాంస భక్షణ పూర్తి వదలాలి.
Therefore the true devotees should give up meat eating.
మేము సాయి భక్తులము, రామ భక్తులము, కృష్ణ భక్తులము అనేది కోళ్లు కోళ్లు తింటూ కూర్చోవటం.
They say we are Sai devotees, Rama devotees, but they eat chicken.
వీడి డివోటీ ఎట్లవుతాడు?
How can you be devotee?
వీడి నిజమైన భక్తులు ఎట్లవుతాడు?
How can you be true devotee?
కనుక వీడు కేవలం రాక్షసుడే.
So you are a demon.
అలాంటి వాడిని భగవంతుడు ఏమాత్రం కూడా అనుగ్రహించడు.
Such man will never be the recipient of God's
grace. ఎవరైనా కూడా స్వదేశీయులు కాని విదేశీయులు కాని నిజంగా స్వామి యొక్క ఆజ్ఞను పాటించేటువంటి వారు ఈ మాంస భక్షణ తక్షణమే విసర్జించాలి.
Therefore whether Indians or foreigners should give up this non-vegetarian food.
The word there is takshanam. Swami says, I mean that was not translated by Professor Anil Kumar sir there. Swami said, whether he is a Swadeshi, that is, whether he is an Indian or a Videshi or a person who is from beyond the shores of India, takshanam, he has to instantaneously give up meat eating. And the other thing that Swami said is, it is papam, meaning sin, which gives rise to tapam, which is worries. Swami is almost assuring that if you commit this sin, you will have worries in life. That is an assurance that we do not like to have, right? So, I don't think there's any further point to prove, Prem. It is just that if we really wish to win Swami's heart, as Swami said to Dr. Mohan via that book, that statement, the first thing we should give up is eating meat. But the beautiful thing is, it is not something to get scared of because it is a tough job. As we have seen in innumerable cases, all that it requires is for us to take the first step. Because Swami says, take one step towards me, I will take 10 towards you.
You know, in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, there is one of the qualities which is suggested for a spiritual aspirant is that he should not take gifts.
Okay.
Which means, the moment you accept gifts or you accept favors from others, then you cannot stick to the path without compromising on it. So he says, the least you depend on the people and the resources around you, the fastest you can progress.
Because the more independent you
are. It's the degrees of entropy. You know, why is air lighter than the other elements? Because the number of things which pulls it down is lesser. So he says that as a person becomes more and more spiritual and begins to take up a spiritual desire, he has to depend less on those around. And that itself is a direct thing saying that, you know, the amount you should depend on the resources around you. And as you can, I mean, we've seen it, Swami has said it in different occasions, you have the elements, above the elements you have plant life, above plant life you have animal life, and above all animal life you have human life. So using any of the other, life forms which actually come higher than plant and mineral forms is actually using more of the resources to keep yourself existent.
In fact, in conversation with John Hislop, in that Swami clearly mentions, meat is alright for those who concentrate only on the body and want to have only strength, physical strength. But for spiritual aspirants, it is not good at all. If you are keen on spiritual life, eating meat is not worthwhile. If you are keen only on worldly life, it may seem all right. That is what Swami says, which means forget a normal human being. If you are oriented towards spiritual life, if you really feel that life is not just about the body and the mind, it is something to do with the spirit and something much higher, which is beyond the body and the mind, then there is no other choice but to give up eating meat.
And the other reason which we spoke about, you know, even when we spoke about Dashara and the significance of Yajna, there Swami had said in a discourse where when a Yajna is performed, the smoke which goes up into the air has the ability to actually have with it the intention with which the Yajna is performed.
Correct.
And that actually sublimates all the resources which go into your food. And when you eat that food, you get good thoughts. And that is why the ancients actually performed these Yajnas and Pujas. If you take the same concept in this, you know, we played that clip where they were saying how animals are ill-treated for them to become your food, which means all the pain, and more than the pain, the fear which the animal feels, actually that emotion goes into your subtle food. That's what Swami says, the protein that feeds your body, you're looking at it. What about that which feeds your mind? Mm. And that which feeds your mind is this fear, this pain, and all these other emotions with which the animal actually gives up its life. And Swami, in fact, in other places has said, the reason why predominantly fear is becoming an important attribute of our thinking process is because of this consumption of food, which actually has the subtle element of fear in it.
Wow, and that is what Swami said in the discourse too, jaisa ann hai vaise man.
Right.
As is the food, so is the mind. But I think, Prem, before leaving, we should leave our listeners on a positive note that though it seems so, so tough to give up meat eating, which almost becomes like an addiction because of the pleasure it gives, it can be as easy as letting go of a handkerchief from the hand. Because, dear listeners, we have got accounts from several people where they have stated that giving up meat eating was as easy. For instance, there's Miss Isha Narayanan who writes that she gave up eating meat the day she saw Swami on the Mahasamadhi day, 24th of April 2011. She saw and she said, something happened and I wanted to do something for Swami. And from that day, she just totally gave up meat eating, which seems so inconceivable. But dear listeners, Prem and my experience has been that even in our own studio, we have some of our colleagues who were non-vegetarians to start off with. But without an exception, each one of them has had a dramatic story of how they gave up. It is dramatic because they just gave it up in one moment on a single day. And there was no relapse, there was no going back to it. And that they credited totally to the love and grace of Swami, because there is nothing that cannot be achieved through Swami's grace. I remember, Prem, you were narrating one more story of an individual.
Yeah, before that, I should tell this, you know, this was a story I promised in the beginning of the satsang, so
okay. It's
good to be, I'm narrating it now. You know, this was shared by one of my juniors,
And
he came to Swami as a child. His parents brought him here, then he became a student when he came here for his degree. In Vrindavan, he was a student. And the first day, Swami had called all of them for a Trayi session. He was inside. On that particular day, Swami first came on the first floor balcony. You know, usually Swami comes into the Jula room in Trayi, but that day in the central hall, Swami came on the balcony. And Swami was going around the balcony. It's a circular balcony.
Correct.
And Swami was looking at all the students who had gathered down and giving them darshan. So at one particular point where this boy was straight face to face with Swami, Swami was there and Swami looked unhappy. Swami was a little unhappy and he was wondering, why is Swami looking unhappy? And the first thought which came in his mind is, because I'm a non-vegetarian.
Oh, okay.
Okay, of all the things in the world, the first thought which came to him is, because I'm a non-vegetarian, maybe Swami is unhappy with me.
Hmm.
And Swami walked away. Swami took another round. And in the span of the time Swami took to move from the spot and again came back to the spot,
maybe 1 minute?
Hardly. I think that should have been the time it took.
Mm-hmm.
This boy had taken a resolve. Swami, okay, from today I'm a vegetarian. If you do not like it, I'm going to give it up and today I'm a vegetarian. And when Swami came back to the same spot, Swami looked straight at him and gave him a beautiful smile.
Wow.
And he said, Swami, I have given it up for you and you have acknowledged it.
You know, Prem, when you said that, I almost got a tear in my eye because that smile on that face, it's a smile worth dying for. But as always, Swami says, make this a smile worth living for. And that is what we can do when we give this up. It is not that we are physically dependent on it. It is because of a habit born from birth or because of a desire that has turned into a habit that we find it difficult to give. But with prayer and effort, it can be accomplished in a trice. And I again, once again, ask you to narrate that incident so that it stands as a very good example of how Swami's grace works like magic.
Yeah, this is about a doctor we interviewed a couple of days back. His interview is still not on air, so this is a sneak preview to that interview. This is about a doctor from Sri Lanka, Dr. Pupal Raja. That's his name. He still serves in the super specialty and the general hospital here. You know, when he came to Swami, he came from the high society, as you call it, you know, if you could call that. He had all the habits which go with that society, drinking, smoking, eating non-vegetarian food. He started coming to Swami and he really felt a need to give up all these qualities of his. And he said that he had tried many times before. You know, he would give up all these qualities for 10 or 15 days and these habits would come back again. And he was not able to give it up. And that was the time when he attended the Rome Convention, you know, one of the major organization meetings of the Satsai organization which happened in Rome. Swami had in fact written a message for that convention and sent it through one of the devotees, which was read there. I'm not too sure of the year. Okay. I think it must be in the 70s.
Okay.
If not earlier. So he had been to that convention. He had attended all the meetings. And he was part of one study circle. I think the topic of that study circle was ceiling on desires. And when he came out of that study circle, he found a real urge to give up all these bad habits, including eating non-vegetarian food. And that urge was so strong that for the first time, actually, he prayed to Swami that, Swami, I want to give up all these things.
Oh, till now he had only tried.
Till then he was only trying, but this time he prayed to Swami that, Swami, I want to give up all these things. And he says he boarded a flight back to his country. When he got off the flight, he had actually had no craving for any of these things.
And since then he has...
And since then he has not indulged in any of these habits.
There you go. Swami's grace makes everything possible. It's just that we need to have the inclination, take the first step and definitely pray.
And it's not just the grace part of it. As Mahatma Gandhi said, don't give up these things for a social reason, for an economic reason, for an environmental reason, for any other reason. Give it up because Swami likes it. And the reason why many of these people whom we spoke about, you know, even the people who work in the studio here found it so easy to give it up was because they gave it up for Swami. They did not give it up for the 101 reasons we told this week and the week, you know, we had last week.
I feel this about everything, Prem, that often we make the reasons after we are convinced. You know, we give it up for Swami and then we find all the scientific reasons to support it. Like, it's like, though if somebody asks us, why is it that you believe in Swami? We may give them 101 reasons. You know, he did this miracle, he's this, he's like a father, he's like a mother, he's like a friend, all that. But these are not the reasons why we feel that he is God actually. We are convinced that he is God and after that we find reasons, 101 reasons to justify that. So in the same way it is like that, the most powerful and most convincing reason for us, especially when we are Swami's devotees, is that Swami does not like it and Swami likes it if I give it up and therefore we give it up. After that is what we have also done, dear listeners. After being convinced of what Swami likes, because Swami likes it, we have gone in search of reasons and found all these reasons. Of course, there might be people who can find counter reasons for some of these. They are welcome to, but they will not be changing Prem and my resolve to stick to vegetarian.
So I think with that thought, Arvind, we'll conclude this discussion on vegetarianism. We again thank the listener who actually suggested, and we had a doubt whether we could do this on vegetarianism, and I think that feedback pushed us towards doing this. So we thank that listener for sending us that feedback. And dear listeners, if you have any feedback about this satsang we've had or the satsang we had last week, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. We keenly await your response because that is what tells us how well we have performed. And so we are definitely looking forward to your response.
And next week, we will be beginning a new series. And what is that series? Is a suspense. Watch out for it. See you next week. Now, we will play a song for you, at the other side of which you'll be joined by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.
మనసులో నీ భావాన్ని